but bursting into tears. I've been bad. I've been so bad, and Kreb is so mad at me. I love him. I don't want him to hate me. Oh, why is he so mad at me? Tears streamed down the unhappy girl's face. She lay down on the ground, sobbing her misery. When she had cried herself out, she sat up and wiped her nose with the back of her hand, her shoulders shaking with renewed sobs every now and then. I won't be bad anymore, ever. Oh, I'll be so good. I'll do whatever Braud wants, no matter what, and I won't ever touch a sling again. To emphasize her conviction, she threw the sling under a bush, raced to get her basket, and started down to the cave. Yssa had been looking for her and saw her returning. Where have you been? You've been gone all morning, and your basket is empty. I've been thinking, Mother, Ayla motioned, looking at Yssa with earnest seriousness. You were right. I've been bad. I won't be bad anymore. I will do everything Braud wants me to, and I will behave the way I should. I won't run or anything. Do you think Kreb will ever love me again, if I'm very, very good? I'm sure he will, Ayla, Yssa replied, patting her gently. She's had that sickness again, the one that makes her eyes water when she thinks Kreb doesn't love her, the woman thought, looking at Ayla's tear-streaked face and red, swollen eyes. Her heart ached for the girl. It's just harder for her. Her kind are different. Perhaps it will be better now. Chapter 11. The change in Ayla was unbelievable. She was a different person. She was contrite. She was docile. She raced to do Braud's bidding. The men were convinced it was brought about by his tightened discipline. They nodded their heads knowingly. She was living proof of what they had always maintained. If men were too lenient, women became lazy and insolent. Women needed the firm guidance of a strong hand. They were weak, willful creatures, unable to exert the self-control of men. They wanted men to command them, to keep them under control, so they would be productive members of the clan and contribute to its survival. It didn't matter that Ayla was only a girl or that she was not truly clan. She was nearly old enough to be a woman, already taller than most, and she was female. The women felt the effects as the men took their own ideas to heart. The men of the clan didn't want to be guilty of leniency. But Braud took the male philosophy to heart with a vengeance. Though he clamped down harder on Oga, it was nothing to the assault he launched on Ayla. If he had been hard on her before, he was doubly hard on her now. He kept after her constantly, hounded her, harassed her, sought her out with every kind of insignificant task to make her jump to his demands, cuffed her at the least infraction, or at no infraction. And he enjoyed it. She had threatened his manhood, and now she was going to pay. Too often had she resisted him, too often had she defied him, too often had he fought to keep from hitting her. Now it was his turn. He had bent her to his will, and he was going to keep her there. Ayla did everything she could to please him. She even tried to anticipate his wants, but that backfired when he reprimanded her for assuming she could know what he wanted. The moment she stepped outside the boundaries of Kreb's hearth, he was ready. And she could not stay within the stones that marked off the magician's private domain without reason. It was the last busy time of the season, with the final preparations for winter. There were just too many things that needed to be done to secure the clan from the fast-approaching cold. Yssa's stock of medicine was essentially complete, so there was little excuse for Ayla to leave the environs of the cave. Braud ran her ragged all day, and at night she collapsed in bed exhausted. Yssa was sure Ayla's change of heart had less to do with Braud than he imagined. It was her love for Kreb more than her fear of Braud. Yssa told the old man Ayla had suffered from her unique sickness again when she thought he didn't love her. You know she went too far, Yssa. I had to do something. If Braud hadn't begun disciplining her again, Brunn would have. That could have been worse. Braud can only make her life miserable. Brunn can make her leave, he replied. But it gave the magician cause to wonder about the power of love having more force than the power of fear, and the theme occupied his thoughts during his meditations for days. Kreb softened toward her almost immediately. It had been all he could do to maintain his indifferent aloofness from the beginning. The first light siftings of snow were washed away by frigid downpours that changed to sleet or freezing rain with the cooling temperatures of evening. Morning found puddles crusted with thin, shattery ice, portending a deeper cold, only to melt again when the capricious wind blew from the south and an irresolute sun decided to press its authority. All during the indecisive transition from late fall to early winter, Ayla never faltered in her proper feminine obedience. She acquiesced to Broud's every whim, jumped at his every demand, bowed her head submissively, controlled the way she walked, never laughed or even smiled, and was totally unresisting. But it wasn't easy. And though she struggled against it, tried to convince herself she was wrong, forced herself to be even more docile, she began to chafe under the yoke. She lost weight, lost her appetite, was quiet and subdued even within Kreb's hearth. Not even Uba could make her smile, though she often picked the baby up the moment she returned to the hearth at night and held her until they both fell asleep. Issa worried about her, and when a day of bright sunshine followed one of freezing rain, she decided it was time to give Ayla a little respite before the winter closed in on them completely. "Ayla," Issa said loudly as they stepped outside the cave before Broud could make his first demand. "I was checking my medicines, and I don't have any snowberry stems for stomach aches. It's easy to identify. It's a bush covered with white berries that stay on after the leaves have fallen." Issa neglected to mention that she had many other remedies in stock for stomach aches. Broud frowned as Ayla raced into the cave for her collecting basket. But he knew that gathering Issa's magic plants was more important than getting him a drink of water, or tea, or a piece of meat, or the fur skins he purposely forgot to wrap around his legs as leggings, or his hood, or an apple, or 2 stones from the stream to crack nuts because he didn't like the stones near the cave, or any of the other inconsequential tasks he might think of for her to do. He stalked away when Ayla emerged from the cave with her basket and digging stick. Ayla ran into the forest, grateful to Issa for the chance to be alone. She glanced around her as she walked, but her mind wasn't on snowberry bushes. She didn't pay any attention to her direction and didn't notice when her feet began to take her along a small creek to a mist-veiled mossy falls. Without thinking, she headed up the steep incline and found herself at her high mountain meadow above the cave. She had not been back since wounding the porcupine. She sat on the bank near the creek, throwing stones into the water absent-mindedly. It was cold. The previous day's rain had been snow at the higher elevation. A thick blanket of white covered the open ground and patches between the snow-dusted trees. The still air glowed with a clarity that matched the sparkling snow, reflecting with untold millions of tiny crystals the brilliant sun in a sky so blue it was almost purple. But Ayla couldn't see the serene beauty of the early winter landscape. It only reminded her that soon the cold would force the clan into the cave, and she would not be able to get away from Broud again until spring. As the sun rose higher in the sky, sudden showers of snow fell from branches and plopped to the ground beneath. The long cold winter loomed bleakly ahead, with Broud hounding her day in and day out. "I just can't satisfy him," she thought. "It doesn't matter what I do, how hard I try. Nothing helps. What else can I do?" She happened to glance at a patch of bare ground and saw a partially rotted pelt and a few scattered quills, all that remained of the porcupine. A hyena probably found him, she thought, or a wolverine. With a twinge of guilt, she thought about the day she hid it. "I should never have taught myself to use a sling. It was wrong. Kreb would be angry, and Broud. Broud wouldn't be angry. He'd be glad if he ever found out. It would really give him an excuse to beat me. Wouldn't he just love to know? Well, he doesn't, and he won't." It gave her a feeling of pleasure to know she had done something he didn't know about that would give him a reason to get after her. She felt like doing something, like slinging a stone to work out her frustrated rebellion. She remembered throwing her sling under a bush and looked for it. She spied the piece of leather under a nearby bush and picked it up. It was damp, but exposure to the weather hadn't damaged it yet. She pulled the smooth, supple deerskin through her hands, liking the way it felt. She recalled the first time she picked up a sling, and a smile crossed her face when she thought about Broud quailing before Brunn's anger for knocking Zaug down. She wasn't the only one who had ever provoked Broud's rage. "Only with me, he can get away with it," Ayla thought bitterly. "Just because I'm female." Brunn was really angry when he hit Zaug. "But he can hit me any time he feels like it, and Brunn wouldn't care." "No, that's not really true," she admitted to herself. "Issa said Brunn dragged Broud away to make him stop beating me. And Broud doesn't hit me as much when Brunn's around. I wouldn't even care if he just hit me, if he would just leave me alone sometimes." She had been picking up pebbles and throwing them into the creek, and found she had fitted one into the sling without thinking. She smiled, sighted a last withered leaf dangling from the end of a small branch, aimed, and hurled. A warm feeling of satisfaction came over her as she saw the stone tear the leaf off the tree. She picked up a few more pebbles, got up, and walked to the middle of the field and hurled them. I can still hit what I want to, she thought, then frowned. What good does that do? I never even tried to hit anything that was moving. The porcupine doesn't count. It had almost stopped. I don't even know if I could. And if I did learn to hunt, really hunt, what good would it do? I couldn't bring anything back. All I'd do is make it easy for some wolf or hyena or wolverine, and they steal enough from us as it is. Hunting and the animals that were killed were so important to the clan, they had to be constantly on their guard against competing predators. Not only did large cats or wolf packs or hyenas sometimes snatch an animal from the hunters, but skulking hyenas or sneaky wolverines were always around when meat was drying, or they were trying to break into caches. Ayla rejected the idea of helping the competitors to survive. Brun wouldn't even let me bring a wolf cub into the cave when it was hurt, and lots of times hunters kill them, even if we don't need their pelts. The meat-eaters are always giving us trouble, that thought stayed in her mind. Then another idea began to take shape. Meat-eaters, she thought. Meat-eaters can be killed with a sling, except for the biggest ones. I remember Zaug telling Vorn. He said sometimes it's better to use a sling. Then you don't have to get so close. Ayla recalled the day Zaug was extolling the virtues of the weapon with which he was most proficient. It was true that with a sling, a hunter didn't have to get as close to sharp fangs or claws. But he didn't mention that if the hunter missed, he could be subject to attack from a wolf or lynx without another weapon to back him up, though he did stress it would be unwise to attempt it on anything larger. What if I hunted only meat-eaters? We never eat them, so it wouldn't be wasting, she thought, even if they would be left for carrion-eaters to finish off. The hunters do it. What am I thinking? Ayla shook her head to banish the shameful thought from her mind. I'm female. I'm not supposed to hunt. I'm not even supposed to touch a weapon. But I do know how to use a sling. Even if I'm not supposed to, she thought defiantly, it would help. If I killed a wolverine or a fox or anything, it couldn't steal our meat anymore. And those ugly hyenas, I might even get one of those someday. Think what a help that would be. Ayla imagined herself stalking the wily predators. She had been practicing with a sling all summer, and though it was only a game, she understood and respected any weapon enough to know its real purpose was game, not target practice, but hunting. She sensed that the excitement of hitting posts or marks on rocks or branches would soon pall without further challenge. And even if it were possible, the challenge of competition for the sake of competition was a concept that would not take hold until the earth was tamed by civilizations that no longer needed to hunt for survival. Competition within the clan was for the purpose of sharpening survival skills. Though she couldn't define it as such, part of her bitterness was caused by giving up the skills she had developed and was ready to expand. She had enjoyed stretching her capacities, training her coordination of hand and eye. And she was proud that she had taught herself. She was ready for the bigger challenge, the challenge of the hunt, but she needed a rationalization. From the beginning, while she was just playing, she visualized herself hunting, and the pleased and surprised looks of the clan when she brought home the meat she had killed. The porcupine made her realize how impossible such a daydream was. She could never bring back a kill and have her prowess recognized. She was female. And females of the clan did not hunt. The idea of killing the clan's competitors gave her a vague feeling that her skill would be appreciated, if not acknowledged, and it gave her a reason to hunt. The more she thought about it, the more she convinced herself that hunting carnivores, even if secretly, was the answer, though she couldn't quite overcome her feelings of guilt. She struggled with her conscience. Kreb and Issa had both told her how wrong it was for females to touch weapons. But I've already done more than touch a weapon, she thought. Can it be so much worse to hunt with it? She looked at the sling in her hand and suddenly made up her mind, fighting down her sense of wrongdoing. I will. I will do it. I will learn to hunt. But I will only kill meat-eaters. She said it emphatically, making the gestures to add finality to her decision. Flushed with excitement, she ran to the creek to look for more stones. While searching for smooth, round pebbles of just the right size, her eye was caught by a peculiar object. It looked like a stone, but it looked like the shell of a mollusk that might be found at the seashore, too. She picked it up and examined it carefully. It was a stone shaped like a shell. What a strange stone, she thought. I've never seen a stone like this before. Then she remembered something Kreb had told her and had a flash of insight so overwhelming she felt her blood drain and a chill crawl down her spine. Her knees were so weak and she was shaking so hard she had to sit down. Cupping the fossil cast of a gastropod in her hands, she stared at it intently. Kreb said, she remembered, when you have a decision to make, your totem will help you. If it's the right decision, he will give you a sign. Kreb said it would be something very unusual, and no one else can tell you if it's a sign. You have to learn to listen with your heart and your mind, and the spirit of your totem inside you will tell you. Great cave lion, is this a sign from you? She used the formal silent language for addressing her totem. Are you telling me I made the right decision? Are you telling me it's all right for me to hunt, even if I am a girl? She sat quietly, staring at the shell-shaped stone in her hand, and tried to meditate as she had seen Kreb do. She knew she was considered unusual because she had a cave lion totem, but she never thought much about it before. She reached under her wrap and felt the scars of the four parallel lines on her leg. Why would a cave lion choose me, anyway? He's a powerful totem, a male totem. Why would he pick a girl? There must be some reason. She thought about the sling and learning to use it. Why did I pick up that old sling that Browd threw away? None of the women would have touched it. What would make me do it? Did my totem want me to? Does he want me to learn to hunt? Only men hunt, but my totem is a male totem. Of course, that must be it. I have a strong totem and he wants me to hunt. Oh, great cave lion, the ways of the spirits are strange to me. I don't know why you want me to hunt, but I am happy you gave me this sign. Ayla turned the stone over in her hand again. Then she took the amulet from around her neck, pried loose the knot that held the small pouch closed, and put the fossil cast into the leather bag beside the piece of red ochre. Tying it tightly again, she slipped it back over her head and noticed the difference in weight. It seemed to add weight to her totem's sanction of her decision. Her guilt was gone. She was supposed to hunt. Her totem wanted her to. It didn't matter if she was female. I'm like Dirk, she thought. He left his clan even though everyone said it was wrong. I think he did find a better place, where Ice Mountain couldn't reach him. I think he started a whole new clan. He must have had a strong totem, too. Kreb says strong totems are hard to live with. He says they test you to make sure you are worthy before they give you something. He says that's why I almost died before Issa found me. I wonder if Dirk's totem tested him. Will my cave lion test me again? Test can be hard, though. What if I'm not worthy? How will I know if I'm being tested? What hard thing will my totem make me do? Ayla thought about what was hard in her life, and it suddenly came to her. Browd! Browd is my test, she gestured to herself. What could be harder than having to face a whole winter with Browd? But if I'm worthy, if I can do it, my totem will let me hunt. There was a difference in the way Ayla walked when she returned to the cave, and Issa noticed it, though she couldn't quite say what was different about it. It wasn't less proper, it just seemed easier, not as tense, and there was a look of acceptance on the girl's face when she saw Browd approaching. Not resignation, just acceptance. But it was Kreb who noticed the extra bulge in her amulet. As the winter closed in, they were both glad to see her return to normal, despite Braud's demands. Though she was often tired, when she played with Uba, her smiles were back, if not her laughter. Kreb guessed she had come to some decision and found a sign from her totem, and her easier acceptance of her place in the clan gave him a feeling of relief. He was aware of her inward struggle, but he knew it was not only necessary to bend to Braud's will, she had to stop fighting it. She had to learn self-control, too. During the winter that began her eighth year, Ayla became a woman. Not physically, her body still had the straight, undeveloped lines of a girl, without the least hint of the changes to come. But it was during that long, cold season that Ayla put her childhood aside. At times, her life was so unbearable, she wasn't sure if she wanted it to continue. Some mornings, when she opened her eyes to the familiar rough texture of the bare rock wall above her, she wished she could go back to sleep and never wake up. But when she thought she couldn't stand it any longer, she clutched her amulet, and the feel of the extra stone somehow gave her the patience to endure another day. And each day lived through brought her just that much closer to the time when the deep snows and icy blasts would change to green grass and sea breezes, and she could roam the fields and forests in freedom again. Like the woolly rhinoceros, whose spirit he called his totem, Braud could be as stubborn as he could be unpredictably vicious. Characteristic of the clan, once he settled on a particular course of action, he persisted with unswerving dedication, and Braud dedicated himself to keeping Ayla in line. Her daily ordeal of clouts and curses and constant harassment was obvious to the rest of the clan. Many felt she did deserve some discipline and punishment, but few approved of the lengths to which Braud went. Brunn was still concerned that Braud was letting the girl provoke him too much. But since the young man controlled his fury, the leader felt it was a definite improvement. But Brunn hoped to see the son of his mate pursue a more moderate approach on his own and decided to let the situation run its course. As the winter wore on, he began to develop a certain grudging respect for the strange girl, the same kind of respect he had felt for his sibling when she had endured the beatings of her mate. Like Issa, Ayla was setting an example of womanly behavior. She endured without complaint, as a woman should. When she paused momentarily to clutch her amulet, Brunn and many of the others took it as an indication of her reverence for the spiritual forces so fearfully important to the clan. It added to her feminine stature. The amulet did give her something to believe in. She did revere the spiritual forces as she understood them. Her totem was testing her. If she proved worthy, she could learn to hunt. The more Braud badgered her, the more determined she became that she would begin to teach herself when spring came. She was going to be better than Braud, better even than Zaug. She was going to be the best sling hunter in the clan, though no one would know it but her. That was the thought she clung to. It solidified in her mind, like the long tapering shafts of ice that formed at the top of the entrance to the cave where warm air from the fires rose to meet the freezing temperatures outside, and grew, like the heavy translucent curtains of ice, all through the winter. Though it wasn't intentional, she was already training herself. Despite the fact that it brought her into closer contact with Braud, she found herself interested and drawn to the men when they sat together spending long days rehashing earlier hunts or discussing strategy for future ones. She found ways to work near them, and especially liked it when Dorv or Zaug told tales of hunting with the sling. She revived her interest in Zaug and her feminine response to his wishes, and developed a genuine affection for the old hunter. He was like Preb in a way, proud and stern, and glad for a little attention and warmth, if only from a strange, ugly girl. Zaug was not blind to her interest as he recounted past glories when he was second in command, as Grad was now. She was an appreciative, if silent, audience, and always demurely respectful. Zaug began to seek Vorn out to explain some technique of tracking or bit of hunting lore, knowing the girl would find a way to sit nearby if she could, though he affected not to notice. If she enjoyed his tales, what harm could there be in that? If I were younger, Zaug thought, and still a provider, I might take her as a mate when she becomes a woman. She'll need a mate someday, and ugly as she is, she's going to have some trouble finding one. But she is young, and strong, and respectful. I have kin in other clans. If I'm strong enough to go to the next clan gathering, I'll speak for her. She may not want to stay here after Braud becomes leader. Not that it matters what she wants, but I wouldn't blame her. I hope I will be gone to the next world before that happens. Zaug never forgot Braud's attack on him, and he didn't like the son of Brunn's mate. He thought the future leader was unreasonably hard on the girl for whom he had developed an affection. She did deserve to be disciplined, but there were limits, and Braud went beyond them. She was never disrespectful to him. It took an older, wiser man to know how to handle women. Yes, I will speak for her. If I can't go, I'll send a message. Only she weren't so ugly, he mused. As difficult as it was for Ayla, it wasn't all bad. Activities were at a slower pace, and there were fewer chores to do. Even Braud could find only so many tasks before there were none left. As time went along, he got a little bored. There wasn't any fight in her anymore, and the intensity of his harassment slackened. And there was another reason that Ayla began to find the winter more bearable. At first, in an effort to find valid reasons for her to stay within the boundaries of Kreb's fire, Issa decided to begin training her in the preparation and application of the herbs and plants Ayla had been gathering. Ayla found herself fascinated with the art of healing. The girl's avid interest soon involved Issa in a regular program and made the medicine woman think she should have begun sooner as she became fully aware of just how differently her adopted daughter's mind worked. If Ayla had been her true child, Issa would only have had to remind her of what was already stored in her brain to get her accustomed to using it. But Ayla struggled to memorize knowledge Uba was born with, and Ayla's conscious memory wasn't as good. Issa had to drill her, go over the same material many times, and constantly test her to make sure she had it right. Issa pulled information from her memories as well as her own experience, and was surprised herself at the wealth of knowledge she had. She'd never had to think about it before. It was just there when she needed it. Sometimes Issa despaired of ever teaching Ayla what she knew, or even enough to make her an adequate medicine woman. But Ayla's interest never flagged, and Issa was determined to give her adopted daughter an assured status in the clan. The lessons went on daily. What is good for burns, Ayla?
Let me think. Hyssop flowers mixed with goldenrod flowers and cone flowers, dried and powdered together in equal parts. Wet it and make it into a poultice. Cover with a bandage. When it dries, wet it again with cold water poured on the bandage.
She finished in a rush, then paused to think.
And dried horse mint flowers and leaves are good for scalds. Wet them in the hand and put them on the burn. Boiled roots of sweet rush make a wash for burns.
Good. Anything else? The girl searched her mind.
Giant hyssop, too. Chew the fresh leaves and stalk for a poultice, or wet the dried leaves. And, oh yes, boiled yellow-spine thistle blossoms, put on as a wash after it's cooled.
That's good for skin sores, too, Ayla. And don't forget that horsetail fern ashes, mixed with fat, make a good burn ointment. Ayla began to do more of the cooking, too, under Issa's direction. She soon took over the chore of preparing most of Kreb's meals, except, for her, it wasn't a chore. She took pains to grind his grains especially fine before they were cooked, to make it easier for him to chew with his worn teeth. Nuts, too, were chopped fine before she served them to the old man. Issa taught her to prepare the pain-killing drinks and poultices that eased his rheumatism, and Ayla made a specialty of the remedies for that affliction of the older members of the clan, whose suffering invariably worsened with their confinement to the cold stone cave. That winter was the first time Ayla assisted the medicine woman, and their first patient was Kreb. It was midwinter. The heavy snowfalls had blocked the mouth of the cave several feet up. The insulating blanket of snow helped to keep the warmth from fires inside the large cavern, but the wind still whistled in through the large opening above the snow. Kreb was unusually moody, vacillating from silence to grouchiness to apologetic repentance to silence again. His behavior confused Ayla, but Issa guessed the reason. Kreb had a toothache, a particularly painful toothache.
Kreb, won't you just let me look at the tooth? Issa pleaded.
It's nothing, just a toothache, just a little pain. Don't you think I can stand a little pain? Don't you think I've had pain before, woman? What's a little toothache? Kreb snapped.
Yes, Kreb, Issa replied, head bowed. He was immediately contrite.
Issa, I know you're only trying to help.
If you'd let me look at it, I might be able to give you something for it. How can I know what to give you if you won't let me see it?
What's to see? He motioned. One bad tooth is the same as another. Just make me some willow bark tea,
Kreb grumbled, then sat on his sleeping fur, gazing into space. Issa shook her head and went to make the tea.
Woman, Kreb shouted shortly afterward, where's that willow bark? What's taking you so long? How can I meditate? I can't concentrate, he gestured impatiently.
Issa hurried over with a bone cup, signaling Ayla to follow.
I was just bringing it, but I don't think willow bark is going to be much help, Kreb.
Just let me look at it. All right, Issa, look.
He opened his mouth and pointed at the offending tooth.
See how deep the black hole goes, Ayla. The gum is swelling. It's decayed through. I'm afraid it will have to come out, Kreb. Come out? You told me you just wanted to look so you could give me something for it. You didn't say anything about taking it out. Well, give me something for it, woman.
Yes, Kreb, Issa said. Here's your willow bark tea.
Ayla watched the exchange with amazement.
I thought you said willow bark wouldn't help much.
Nothing will help much. You can try a piece of sweet rush root to chew. It might do some good, but I doubt it.
Some medicine woman can't even cure a toothache, Kreb grumbled.
I could try burning out the pain, Issa motioned matter-of-factly.
Kreb flinched.
I'll take the root, he replied.
The next morning,
Kreb's face was swollen and puffy, making his one-eyed, scarred face more fearsome. His eyes were red from lack of sleep.
Isa, he moaned, can't you do something for this toothache?
If you had let me take it out yesterday, the pain would be gone by now, Isa motioned, and went back to stirring a bowl of parched ground grain, watching bubbles slowly rising with a gentle pukka, pukka, pukka.
Woman, have you no feelings? I haven't slept all night.
I know. You kept me awake.
Well, do something, he exploded.
Yes, Kreb, Isa said, but I can't take it out now until the swelling goes down.
Is that all you can think of, taking it out?
I can try one more thing, Kreb, but I don't think I can save the tooth, she gestured sympathetically. Ayla, bring me that packet with the splinters of charred wood from the tree that was struck by lightning last summer. We'll have to lance the gum to reduce the swelling now, before we can get the tooth out anyway. We might as well see if we can burn out the pain. Kreb shuddered at the instructions the medicine woman gave the girl. Then he shrugged. Can't be much worse than the toothache, he thought. Isa sorted through the packet of splinters and withdrew two. Ayla, I want you to get the tip of this one red hot. The end should be like a coal, but still strong enough so it won't break off. Rake a coal out of the fire and hold the tip next to it until it smolders. But first, I want you to watch how to lance the gum. Hold his lips back for me. Ayla did as she was instructed and looked into Kreb's huge open mouth and at the two rows of large, worn teeth. We puncture the gum with a hard, sharp splinter beneath the tooth until the blood flows, Isa gestured, then demonstrated. Kreb's hand was clenched into a fist, but he made no sound. Now, while this is draining, get the other splinter hot. Ayla quickly ran to the fire and soon returned with a smoldering ember on the end of the charred splinter. Isa took it, looked at it critically, nodded her head, and motioned to Ayla to hold back his lips again. She inserted the hot point into the cavity. Ayla felt Kreb jerk as she heard a sizzle and watched a thin wisp of steam rise out of the large hole in Kreb's tooth. There, it's done. Now we wait to see if that will kill the pain. If not, the tooth will have to come out, Isa said after she swabbed the wound on Kreb's gum with a mixture of geranium and spikenard root powders on the tip of her finger. It's too bad I don't have any of the fungus that is so good for toothaches. Sometimes it will deaden the nerve, often draw it out. Then I might not have to take the tooth. It's best to use when it's fresh, but dried works, and it should be collected at the end of summer. If I find some next year, I'll show you, Ayla. Does your tooth still ache? Isa asked the next day.
It's better, Isa, Kreb answered hopefully.
But does it still hurt? If the pain isn't completely gone, it will just swell up again, Kreb, Isa insisted.
Well, yes, it still aches, he admitted, but not as much, really not as much. Why not wait another day or so? I have cast a powerful spell. I've asked Ursus to destroy the bad spirit that is causing the pain.
Haven't you already asked Ursus many times to rid you of that pain? I think Ursus wants you to sacrifice your tooth before he will make the pain stop, Mogur, Isa said.
What do you know of the great Ursus, woman? Kreb demanded irritably.
This woman was presumptuous. This woman knows nothing of the ways of the spirits, Isa replied with bowed head, then looking up at her sibling. But a medicine woman knows about toothaches. The pain will not stop until the tooth comes out, she motioned firmly.
Kreb turned his back and limped away. He sat on his sleeping fur with his eye closed. Isa, he called out after a while.
Yes, Kreb?
You're right. Ursus wants me to give up the tooth. Go ahead, get it over with.
Isa walked over to him. Here, Kreb, drink this. It will make the pain less. Ayla, there is a small peg near the packet of splinters and a long piece of sinew. Bring them here.
How did you know to have the drink ready? Kreb asked.
I know Mogur. It is hard to give up a tooth, but if Ursus wants it, Mogur will give it. It is not the hardest sacrifice he has made to Ursus. A powerful totem is difficult to live with, but Ursus would not have chosen you if you were not worthy.
Kreb nodded and swallowed the drink.
It's from the same plant I use to help men with the memories, he thought. But I think I saw Isa boil it. She makes a decoction rather than an infusion. It's stronger than when it's steeped. It has many uses. Datura must be a gift from Ursus. He was beginning to feel the narcotic effects. Isa told Ayla to hold open the old magician's mouth again while she carefully placed the peg at the base of the aching tooth. She gave the peg a sharp blow with a stone held in her hand to loosen it. Kreb jumped, but it was not as painful as he thought it would be. Then Issa tied the piece of sinew around the loosened tooth and told Ayla to secure the other end around one of the posts set firmly into the ground that was part of the frame from which herbs were hanging to dry. "Now move his head back until the cord is taut, Ayla," Issa told the girl. With a quick jerk, Issa yanked on the sinew. "Here it is," she said, and held up the cord with a heavy molar dangling from it. She sprinkled dry geranium root on the bleeding hole and dipped a small piece of absorbent rabbit skin in an antiseptic solution of balsam gum bark and a few of the dried leaves, and packed his jaw with the damp leather. "Take your tooth, Mogur," Issa said, putting the decayed molar into the hand of the still dazed magician. "It's all over." He clenched it in his hand, then let it drop as he lay down. "Must give Ursus," he mumbled groggily. The clan watched to see how well Kreb recovered after Ayla assisted the medicine woman with her dental surgery. When his mouth healed quickly, without any complications, they felt more assured that the girl's presence didn't alienate the spirits. It made them more willing to allow her to assist when Issa helped them. As the winter progressed, Ayla learned to treat burns, cuts, bruises, colds, sore throats, stomach aches, earaches, and many of the minor injuries and ailments they fell heir to in the normal course of living. In time, members of the clan went as easily to Ayla as to Issa for treatment of minor problems. They knew Ayla had been collecting herbs for Issa and saw the medicine woman training her. They knew, too, that Issa was getting old and wasn't well, and Uba was too young. The clan was getting used to the strange girl in their midst and was beginning to accept the idea that a girl born to the others might someday be the medicine woman of their clan. It was during the coldest time of the year, after the winter solstice and before the first breakup of spring, that Ovra went into labor. "It's too early," Issa told Ayla. "She should not deliver until spring, and she hasn't felt movement recently. I'm afraid the birth will not go well. I think her baby will be stillborn." "Ovra wanted this baby so much, Issa. She was so happy when she found out she was pregnant. Can't you do anything?" Ayla asked. "We'll do what we can. But there are some things that are beyond help, Ayla," the medicine woman replied. The whole clan was concerned about the early labor of Guv's mate. The women tried to offer moral support, while the men waited anxiously nearby. They had lost several members during the earthquake and looked forward to any increases in their number. New babies meant more mouths for Brun's hunters and the foraging women to feed, but in time, the babies would grow and provide for them when they grew old. The continuation and survival of the clan was essential to individual survival. They needed each other, and were saddened that Ovra would probably not give birth to a living baby. Guv was more worried for his mate than for the child, and wished there was something he could do. He didn't like to see Ovra suffering, especially when the outcome had so little hope of being anything but unhappy. She wanted the baby. She had felt inadequate to be the only woman in the clan without children. Even the medicine woman had given birth, as old as she was. Ovra had been elated when she finally became pregnant, and now Guv wished he could think of some way to ease her loss. Drug seemed to understand the younger man better than anyone. He'd had occasion to have similar feelings about Guv's mother, though he was glad she had given birth to Guv, and Drug had to admit he was enjoying his new family once he had gotten used to them. He even had hopes that Vorn might yet develop an interest in toolmaking. And Ona was sheer delight, especially now that she was weaned and was beginning to imitate grown women in her own little girl way. Drug had never had a girl around his fire before, and she was so young when he had made it Aga, it felt as though Ona had been born to his hearth. Ebra and Uka were sitting beside Ovra, sympathizing, while Issa prepared medication. Uka had been looking forward to her daughter's expected child, too, and held Ovra's hand while she strained. Olga had gone to prepare an evening meal for Brun and Grad, along with Braud, and had asked Guv as well. Ika offered to help, but when Guv declined, Olga said she didn't need help. Guv didn't feel much like eating, and went to visit Drug's hearth, and was finally coaxed by Abba to try a few bites. Olga was distracted, worried about Ovra, and was beginning to wish she hadn't turned down Ika's offer. She didn't know how it happened, but as she was serving bowls of hot soup to the men, she stumbled. Boiling hot soup spilled on Brun's shoulder and arm.
"Ugh!"
Brun cried as the scalding liquid poured over him. He was dancing around, gritting his teeth at the pain. Every head turned, and every breath was held. The silence was broken by Braud. Olga, you stupid, clumsy woman, he gesticulated, to cover up his embarrassment that it was his maid who had done such a thing.
Ayla, go help him. I can't leave now, Issa signaled.
Braud advanced toward his mate with his fists doubled, ready to punish her.
No, Braud, Brunn gestured,
putting out his hand to stop the young man. The hot grease from the soup still clung to him, and he struggled not to show the pain he felt.
She couldn't help it. Beating her will do no good.
Olga was crumpled in a heap at Braud's feet, shaking with humiliation and fear. Ayla was apprehensive. She had never treated the leader of the clan, and regarded him with inordinate fear. She raced toward Kreb's hearth, grabbed a wooden bowl, then raced to the mouth of the cave. She scooped up a mound of snow and went to the hearth of the leader, dropping to the ground in front of him.
Issa sent me. She cannot leave Ovra now. Will the leader allow this girl to help him?
She asked when Brunn acknowledged her.
Brunn nodded. He harbored doubts about Ayla becoming the clan's medicine woman, but under the circumstances, he had little choice but to allow her to treat him.
Nervously, she applied the cooling snow to the angry red burn, feeling Brunn's hard muscles relax as the snow eased the pain. She ran back, found the dried horse mint, and added hot water to the leaves. After they softened, she put snow in the bowl to cool it quickly and returned to her patient. With her hand, she applied the soothing medication, feeling more tension leave the leader's rock-hard muscular body as she worked. Brunn breathed a little easier. The burn still hurt, but it was far more bearable. He nodded his approval, and the girl relaxed a little. She does seem to be learning Issa's magic, Brunn thought, and she's learning to behave well, as a woman should. Perhaps all she needed was a little maturity. If anything happens to Issa before Uba grows up, we will be without a medicine woman. Perhaps Issa is wise to train her. Not long afterward, Abra came and told her mate that Ovra's son was stillborn. Brunn nodded and glanced in her direction, shaking his head. And a boy, too, he thought. She must be heartbroken. Everyone knows how much she wanted this baby. I hope she'll have an easier time getting pregnant again. Who would think a beaver totem could fight so hard? Though the leader felt a great pity for the young woman, he said nothing, for no one would mention the tragedy. But Ovra understood Brunn's reason for coming to Guv's hearth a few days later to tell her she should take as long as she wanted to recuperate from her illness. Though the men often congregated at Brunn's fire, the leader seldom visited the other men's hearths, and very rarely talked to the women if he did. Ovra was grateful for his concern, but nothing could ease her pain. Issa insisted that Ayla continue to treat Brunn, and as the scald healed, the clan accepted her even more. Ayla felt easier around the leader afterward. He was, after all, only human. Chapter 12. As the long winter ended, the tempo of the clan's life increased to match the pace of life quickening within the rich earth. The cold season enforced not a true hibernation, but an alteration in metabolic rates brought about by reduced activities. In winter, they were more sluggish, slept more, ate more, causing an insulating layer of subcutaneous fat to develop as protection against the cold. With a rise in temperature, the trend was reversed, making the clan restless and eager to be out and moving. The process was assisted by Issa's spring tonic, compounded of triticum roots, collected early in spring from the coarse grass that resembled rye, dried woodruff leaves, and iron-rich yellow dockroot powder, administered universally to young and old alike by the clan's medicine woman. With new vigor, the clan burst out of the cave, ready to begin a new cycle of seasons. The third winter in the cave had not been too hard on them. The only death was Ovra's stillborn child, and that didn't count because it had never been named and accepted. Issa, no longer drained by the demands of nursing a hungry baby, had weathered it well. Kreb had suffered no more than usual. Both Aga and Ika were pregnant again, and since both women had given birth successfully before, the clan looked forward to its increase. The first greens, shoots, and buds were gathered, and an early hunt planned to provide fresh meat for a spring feast to honor the spirits that awakened new life, and to give thanks to the spirits of the clan's protective totems for seeing them through another winter. Ayla felt she had special reason to give thanks to her totem. The winter had been both trying and exciting. She grew to hate Braud even more intensely, but she learned she could cope with him. He had thrown his worst at her, and she learned to take it in stride. There was a limit beyond which even Braud could not go. Learning more of Issa's healing magic helped. She loved it. The more she learned, the more she wanted to learn. She found she was as eager to search out the medicinal plants for their own uses, now that she understood them better, as to use plant gathering as a means of escape. As long as the bitter winds and icy blizzards blew, she waited patiently. But with the first hints of change, restless anticipation set in. She looked forward to this spring more than any spring she could remember. It was time to learn to hunt. As soon as the weather allowed, Ayla took to the woods and fields. She stopped hiding her sling in the small cave near her practice meadow. She kept it with her, tucked into a fold of her wrap, or beneath a layer of leaves in her collecting basket. Teaching herself to hunt was not easy. Animals were quick and elusive, and moving targets far more difficult to hit than stationary ones. The women always made noise when they were out gathering to scare off any lurking animals, and it was a hard habit to break. Many times she became angry with herself for warning an animal of her approach when she caught a glimpse of one darting for cover. But she was determined, and with practice, she learned. Through trial and error, she learned to track and began to understand and apply the bits of hunting lore gleaned from the men. Her eye was already trained to pick up small details that differentiated plants, and it took only an extension to learn to define the meaning in the telltale droppings of an animal, a faint print in the dust, a bent blade of grass or a broken twig. She learned to distinguish the spore of different animals, became familiar with their habits and habitats. Though she didn't overlook the herbivorous species, she concentrated on the carnivores, her chosen prey. She watched to see which way the men went when they left to go hunting. But it was not Brunn and his hunters that gave her the most concern. More often than not, they chose the steppes as their hunting ground, and she didn't dare try to hunt the open plains with no cover. It was the two older men she worried about most. She had seen Zaug and Dorv occasionally when she was foraging for Issa in the past. They were the ones she was most likely to find hunting the same terrain as herself. She had to be constantly on her guard to avoid them. Even starting out in the opposite direction was no guarantee they wouldn't double back and catch her with a sling in her hands. But as she learned to move silently, she sometimes followed them to watch and learn. She was especially careful then. It was more dangerous for her to track the trackers than the objects of their pursuit. It was good training, however. She learned to move noiselessly, as much from following the men as from trailing an animal, and could meld into a shadow if one happened to glance her way. As Ayla gained skill tracking, learned to move with stealth, trained her eye to discern a shape within its camouflaged cover. There were times when she was sure she could have hit a small animal. Though she was tempted, if it was not carnivorous, she passed it by without trying. She had made her decision to hunt only predators, and her totem sanctioned only those. Spring buds became blossoms and leafed out the trees. Blossoms fell, and fruit swelled from their hearts, hanging half-grown and green. And still, Ayla had not killed her first animal. "Get out! Shoot! Scat!" Ayla started out of the cave to see what the commotion was about. Several women were waving their arms and chasing after a short, squat, shaggy animal. The wolverine headed toward the cave, but veered aside with a snarl when it saw Ayla. It dodged between the woman's legs and escaped with a strip of meat in its jaws. "That sneaky glutton! I just put that meat out to dry!" Oga gesticulated in angry frustration. "I hardly turned my back. He's been hanging around here all summer, getting braver every day. I wish Zaug would get him. It's a good thing you were just coming out, Ayla. He almost ran into the cave. Think what a stink he would have left if he'd gotten cornered in there." "I think your he is a she, Oga, and probably has a nest somewhere nearby. I guess she has several hungry babies that must be getting pretty big by now."
"That's all we need, a bunch of them." Angry words punctuated her gestures. "Zaug and Dorv took Vorn with them early this morning. I wish they'd gone hunting for that wolverine instead of hamsters and ptarmigan down below. Gluttons are good for nothing."
"They're good for something, Oga. Their fur doesn't frost up from your breath in winter. Their pelts make good hats and hoods."
"I wish that one were a pelt."
Ayla started back to the hearth. There was really nothing she had to do then, and Issa did say she was running low on a few things. Ayla decided to go out and find the wolverine's nest. She smiled to herself and quickened her step, and shortly afterward left the cave with her basket, heading into the forest, not far from the place where the animal had gone. Scanning the ground, she spied the print of a claw with long, sharp nails in the dust. A little farther on, a bent stem. Ayla started trailing the creature. In a few moments, she heard scuttling sounds, surprisingly close to the cave. She moved ahead, softly, hardly disturbing a leaf, and caught sight of the wolverine with 4 half-grown young, snarling and bickering over the strip of stolen meat. Carefully, she withdrew her sling from a fold of her wrap and fitted a stone into the bulging pocket. She waited, watching for a chance at a clean shot. A stray shift in the wind brought a strange scent to the wily glutton. She looked up, sniffing the air, alerted to possible danger. It was the moment Ayla was waiting for. Quickly, even as the animal caught the movement, she hurled the stone. The wolverine slumped to the ground as the 4 young bounded off, startled by the bouncing rock. She stepped out of the concealing brush and stooped to examine the scavenger. The bear-like weasel was about 3 feet long from its nose to the tip of its bushy tail, with coarse, long, blackish-brown fur. Wolverines were intrepid, scrappy scavengers, fierce enough to drive away predators larger than themselves from their kills, fearless enough to steal drying meat or anything portable they could carry off, and wily enough to break into storage caches. They had musk glands that left behind a skunk-like odor and were a bane to the clan, even worse than the hyena, who was as much predator as scavenger and didn't depend for his survival on the kills of others. The stone from Ayla's sling had landed above the eye, just where she aimed. "This is one wolverine that won't steal from us anymore," Ayla thought, filled with a glow of satisfaction that verged on exultation. It was her first kill. "I think I'll give the pelt to Oga," she thought, reaching for her knife to skin the animal. "Won't she be glad to know it won't bother us anymore?" The girl stopped. "What am I thinking of? I can't give Oga this pelt. I can't give it to anyone. I can't even keep it. I'm not supposed to hunt. If anyone found out I killed this wolverine, I don't know what they'd do." Ayla sat down beside the dead glutton, pulling her fingers through its long, coarse coat. Her elation was gone. She had made her first kill. Maybe it wasn't a great bison killed with a heavy, sharp spear, but it was more than Vorn's porcupine. There would be no celebration marking her entrance into the ranks of the hunters. No feast held in her honor, not even the looks of praise and congratulations Vorn received when he proudly showed off his small game. If she returned to the cave with a wolverine, all she could expect would be shocked looks and severe punishment. It mattered little that she wanted to help the clan or that she was able to hunt and showed promise of doing well. Women did not hunt. Women did not kill animals. Men did. She heaved a sigh. "I knew it. I knew it all along," she said to herself. "Even before I started to hunt, before I ever picked up that sling, I knew I wasn't supposed to." The bravest of the young gluttons came out of its hiding place, tentatively sniffing at the dead animal. "Those young ones are going to give us as much trouble as their mother," Ayla thought. "They're close enough to full grown that a couple of them will survive. I'd better get rid of this carcass. If I drag it far away, the young will probably follow her scent." Ayla got up and began to haul the dead wolverine by its tail, deeper into the woods. Then she started looking for plants to gather. The wolverine was only the first of the smaller predators and scavengers to fall to her sling. Martens, minks, ferrets, otters, weasels, badgers, ermines, foxes, and the small gray and black tabby-striped wildcats became fair game for her swift stones. She didn't realize it, but Ayla's decision to hunt predators had one important effect. It speeded up her learning process and honed her skill far more than hunting the gentler, herbivorous animals would have. Carnivores were faster, more crafty, more intelligent, and more dangerous. She quickly surpassed Vorn with her chosen weapon. It wasn't only that he tended to look upon the sling as an old man's weapon. The day was hot, unbearably hot, not the heat. Storm with its fantastic displays of arcing flashes illuminating the mountain crests and with hail the size of small stones had sent the clan scurrying into the cave. The damp forest, normally cool from the shade of the trees, was humid and stifling. Flies and mosquitoes droned interminably around the slimy ooze of the drying creek's backwater, trapped by lowered water levels into stagnant ponds and algae-coated puddles. Ayla was following the spoor of a red fox, moving silently through the woods near the edge of a small glade. She was hot and sweaty, not especially interested in the fox, and thinking about giving it up and going back to the cave to take a swim in the stream. Walking across the seldom-exposed rocky bed, she stopped for a drink where the creek still ran freely between two large boulders that forced the meandering trickle into an ankle-deep pool. She stood up, and as she looked straight ahead, caught her breath in her throat. Ayla stared apprehensively at the distinctive head and tufted ears of a lynx crouched on the rock just in front of her. He was eyeing her warily, his short tail whipping back and forth. Smaller than most large felines, the long-bodied, short-legged Pardell lynx, like his northern cousin of later years, was capable of 15-foot standing leaps. He subsisted mainly on hares, rabbits, large squirrels, and other rodents, but could bring down a small deer if he felt so inclined. And an 8-year-old girl was easily within his range. But it was hot, and humans were not his normal prey. He would probably have let the girl go on her way. Ayla's first tingle of fear was replaced by a chill of excitement as she watched the unmoving cat watching her. Didn't Zaug tell Vorn a lynx could be killed with a sling? He said not to try for anything larger, but he did say a stone from a sling could kill a wolf or hyena or lynx. I remember him saying lynx, she thought. She had not hunted the medium-sized predators, but she wanted to be the best sling hunter in the clan. If Zaug could kill a lynx, she could kill a lynx. And here, right in front of her, was the perfect target. On impulse, she decided the time had come for larger game. She reached slowly into the fold of her short summer wrap, never taking her eyes off the cat, and felt for her largest stone. Her palms were sweaty, but she gripped the two ends of the leather strap together tighter while she put the stone in the pocket. Then, quickly, before she lost her nerve, she aimed for a spot just between his eyes and flung the stone. But the lynx caught the motion as she raised her arm. He turned his head as she hurled. The rock grazed the side of his head, causing a sharp pain at the point-blank range, but little more. Before Ayla could think of reaching for another stone, she saw the cat's muscles bunch under him. It was with sheer reflex that she threw herself to the side as the annoyed lynx leaped for his attacker. She landed in the mud near the creek, and her hand fell on a stout driftwood branch, churned clean of leaves and twigs by its journey downstream, waterlogged and heavy. Ayla clutched it and rolled over just as the angry lynx with fangs bared pounced again. Swinging wildly with all the strength fear poured into her, she struck a solid blow, knocking his head aside. The stunned lynx rolled over, crouched for a moment, shaking his head, then moved silently into the forest. He'd had enough hurting blows to his head. Ayla was shaking as she sat up, breathing hard. Her knees felt like water when she went to retrieve her sling, and she had to sit down again. Zaug had never imagined that anyone would attempt to hunt a dangerous predator with just a sling, with no other hunter or even another weapon as backup. But Ayla hardly ever missed her targets anymore. She had become too sure of her skill. She didn't think about what might happen if she missed. She was in such a state of shock as she walked back to the cave, she almost forgot to get her collecting basket from the place she had hidden it before deciding to track the fox. "Ayla, what happened to you? You're all muddy." Issa motioned when she saw her. The girl's face was ashen. Something must have scared her. Ayla didn't answer. She just shook her head and went into the cave. Issa knew there was something the girl didn't want to tell her. She thought of pressing her further, then changed her mind, hoping the child would tell her voluntarily. And Issa wasn't so sure she wanted to know. It bothered the woman when Ayla went off by herself, but someone needed to gather her medicinal plants. They were necessary. She couldn't go. Uba was too young, and none of the other women knew what to look for or had any inclination to learn. She had to let Ayla go, but if the girl told her of some frightening incident, it would worry her all the more. She just wished Ayla wouldn't stay out so long. Ayla was subdued that evening and went to bed early, but she couldn't sleep. She lay awake thinking about the incident with the lynx, and in her imagination, it became even more frightening. It was early morning before she finally dozed off. She woke up, screaming. "Ayla! Ayla!" she heard Issa call her name as the woman shook her gently to bring her back to reality. "What's wrong?" "I dreamed I was in a little cave, and a cave lion was after me. I'm all right now, Issa." "You haven't had bad dreams for a long time, Ayla. Why should you have them now? Did something frighten you today?" Ayla nodded and bowed her head, but didn't explain. The dark of the cave, lit only by the dim glow of red coals, hid her guilty expression. She hadn't felt guilty about hunting since she found the sign from her totem. Now she wondered if it really was a sign. Maybe she just thought it was. Maybe she wasn't supposed to hunt after all, especially such dangerous animals. Whatever made her think a girl should be trying to hunt lynxes? I never have liked the idea of your going out alone, Ayla. You're always gone so long. I know you like to get off by yourself sometimes, but it worries me. It's not natural for girls to want to be alone so much. The forest can be dangerous.